Welcome back, Two Siblings, One Game of Football, the women's game. And we are here for a midweek Relatively Football. I'm Theo and I'm here with my sister all the way from London, England, but not in person. Flo Lloyd-Hughes. How are you doing, Flo?
I'm good. It will properly blow people's minds when we actually do one in person sometime, won't it? It'll be crazy.
End of this year, 2022, we promise, listeners. It's not so unfathomable. It's been a big week, Flo. We're jumping on back on the midweek game because there was some just pure enjoyable European football going on midweek, and it would be foolish not to talk about it. The UEFA Women's Champions League, Flo, it's back with a bang.
Yeah, and it was fantastic to see it on British television because, talked about it before, but up until the semi-finals, really hard to watch the Champions League in the UK unless one of the teams that involved is English and is, you know, picks it up on a stream or something. So it was great to see BT Sport pick up those two games involving City and Chelsea and really enjoyed it. I thought they were at fairly convenient kickoff times because they didn't clash with any of the men's games last night, of which all of them were pretty rubbish, to be honest. But it probably would have, you know, the Man U Palace game probably would have taken away a few eyes. It was really, really good. Really enjoyed both the games.
Flo, before we get to the games, how was the BT coverage?
Yeah, it was all right. We had Adam... I can't remember his last name. Sorry, Adam. But the guy that normally does the WSL comms with Lucy Ward, he was paired with Jane Ludlow. And then it was a different guy, Jane. I didn't recognise, who was with Lucy Ward. So they were doing the Chelsea game and Adam and Jane Ludlow were doing the City game. Really love Jane Ludlow. Really love Lucy Ward. And yeah, I like that Adam guy as well. So... Good comms. The guy who was doing the Chelsea comms with Lucy Ward did seem more excited about the BT Sport Men's Champions League fixtures that were being shown next week than anything.
Like, that's a no-no.
When he had to do the little read and do the lines to tease next week's games, he was like, will Barcelona be able to come back from that 4-1 deficit against PSG? Will they bring us another incredible, unforgettable match? And I was like, well, we're seeing an unforgettable match right now. This is crazy. Like, what Chelsea have done, the drama in this game, a sending off within 10 minutes, two penalties that are both saved by one goalkeeper. Like, this is incredible. Like, forget about that game next week. Let's get on to that next week. It just, I don't know. Of course he has to do that as part of his job, but I thought it just seemed a little bit overexcited.
It reminds me of that scene in The Simpsons where Krusty the Clown says the loud part quiet and the quiet part loud.
Literally.
Where he's like, let's just say it moved me to a bigger house.
Literally.
And he's like...
Literally.
Yeah, Chelsea, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona next week.
Literally. Literally. That was it. That was it last night.
Well, let's get straight to that game then, Flo. I'm sure you saw this one all over the internet, listener. Chelsea 2, Atletico Madrid 0. What a game. For those that don't know, Chelsea were down to 10 players after just 12 minutes. Sophie Ingle giving away a penalty and receiving the red card. But Can Atrenberger, hands behind the back, made the save. Her hands eventually coming from behind her back to make the save. But they were behind her back while she was setting up. Very interesting technique on that one. Makes an incredible save. And Chelsea come back, get 0-0 at halftime. Very, very tense, nervous game. You're wondering when Madrid can kind of make the advantage count. Second half kicks off. Mielder from the spot. Super Frank Kirby, just unstoppable at the moment, gets a second. And then Flo, just before the end of the game, and Katrenberger steps up and makes another save. Flo, I was watching this game and just, it really, not, I mean, there's a few games this year that have given me the joy in football back again when you think it's gone. But this game was just full of life, full of joy, twists, turns, drama. I mean, it's why we watch the game.
Yeah, and three penalties in total in the whole game. And I thought the ref was pretty good, to be honest. I thought the ref, like, I thought all three penalties were pretty much penalties. And then she had another penalty shout that, Atletico Madrid wanted, I think, before the second one, and I thought she was right not to give it. So I thought, even though there were tons of incidents. I actually thought the ref had quite a good game because it was a difficult one to manage when you're giving a red card so early in a game. Sometimes you then almost try to even things up. But I think she did well to manage the situation. And I think she was right with that sending off of Sophie Ingle. It was very clumsy from Sophie Ingle. Obviously a player I love. And you texted me. You were actually ahead. I was on a bit of a delay on the BT Sport.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I hate when people do that.
And you texted me being like, oh no, your girl. And I was like, what has happened? And then obviously I saw what happened, and
you knew who I was referring to.
Yeah, I mean, obviously she's playing out of position. She has filled in a few times at centre back this season, so it's not completely out of kind of her locker. But obviously she is a defensive midfielder. That's her specialty. That's where she's been so exceptional in her career. So this was, you know, not where she's really meant to be playing. But because of the injury of Magdalene Eriksson, she steps into that role. She has played alongside Millie Bright. Okay, fine. But she was caught out there and she was always chasing and she got the wrong side of the player and brought her down. And I thought it was completely the right decision. And, you know, she was bailed out by her keeper. And unfortunately, Bethany England also had to pay the price because she got subbed off and she was obviously frustrated about that. But yeah, the way Chelsea rode that storm to get the result, Sam Kerr won that penalty, which I think was maybe the softest of the night, in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think going to back to Beth England, I think, you know, when I want to kind of ask you about your heroes of the night, it felt like this epic, heroic, kind of larger than life cinematic match that had so many amazing moments and so many twists and turns and so much drama. But I really think the Beth England sub being that player that has to come off, you know, just over 10 minutes into a game is such a crappy feeling. And you're talking about the WSL player of the season, top scorer from last season. And I thought it was so emblematic of Beth England, who's been such a good servant to Chelsea and a servant to Emma Hayes' methods and Emma Hayes' management and believing in the team above herself, and seeing her go off was so selfless once again. And it just reminded me how good Beth England's attitude has been start to finish this season, which I think is such a credit to her as a player. And then furthermore, Neve Charles, 21 years old, comes on, doesn't miss a heartbeat, you know, biggest game of her life, and she was outstanding for the, you know, for the remaining 85 minutes or whatever. So I thought that was this kind of huge moment that Emma Hayes had to get right, and her players responded immaculately.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just shows how good they are this season, because as soon as the game started, obviously before the sending off, we were texting each other and saying, wow, you know, coming into this, the narrative was that maybe Madrid were going to give Chelsea a run for their money earlier on in this tournament that they perhaps would have liked. A team that's knocked out City twice before, knocked out City last season. And yeah, they're not at their best this season, definitely. They're not as good as they have been in recent years, but still a very good side. But within the first 10 minutes before Ingle got sent off, Chelsea looked like that they didn't have a fear in the world. They were so confident. And I thought it was going to be a pretty big scoreline. Pernille Harder had that chance really early on that she could have put away.
G as well put one just around the wrong side.
So it was looking really good. And then the sending off just flipped on its head. And then you thought, oh God, you know, imagine if this incident is what kind of curtails Chelsea's dream season. And yeah, the way that they just managed that and the way that they, you know, didn't even seem to kind of impact them at all. There are a couple of moments straight afterwards where they kind of looked at each other a bit like, oh shit. But I think the substitution, and you know, Neve Charles as well had massive part to play in the game. I think she really stepped up to the occasion, still pretty young player, been in and out of the team as well this season. And I think she has just, she really stepped up to the role that she needed to play. And yeah, they bounced back like nothing had happened. It's remarkable. And I think it's going to take a lot to beat them this season, because they can just, they seem to be so resilient and they can just really withstand anything you throw at them, apart from a couple of corners against Hope Piles Brighton.
The last few weeks we've been teasing out, in lieu of Manchester United, Canada, we were talking about even England to some extent, kind of championship identity, winner's DNA, mentality. Do you think this was the ultimate mentality match, seeing a team like Chelsea who just seems so ruthless, so flawless, being able to bring quality, create chances, basically make it look like it's 11v11 versus Madrid, who didn't really know how to capitalize on that player advantage, missing penalties, Van Dongen with the second penalty. You know, I know it's late on in the game, but that could have been a huge, huge away goal. and a player, I think you really thought they could have done better there, let alone Denia Castellanos, who's a really young player out of Florida State, was a phenomenon in the United States before going to Atletico Madrid. She steps up and misses the first. Although they were both saves, listener, like they've, you got to give Anne Katchenberger so much credit. But you think...
I think the second one was worse. Was worse. The second one, the save wasn't that difficult, I think. But the first one was a very good save.
They were both low, which I think you got to give them a...
I think like, there's that inexperience, though. That's exactly what it is. Like the way that something like that affects you for then the rest of the game, you're away from home, and mentally you think, oh my God, we've got a man advantage and we're now going to waste this opportunity. And they would have known going into this what they were up against, what Chelsea have put together this season, the narrative and the reputation of that side. That was a huge opportunity for them and a huge lifeline. And then I think as soon as they missed that penalty, I think internally they just never really found their confidence again.
Definitely some credit has to go to Ajibade, who I thought was fantastic. Obviously wins the penalty, gets Sophie Ingle sent off. But you see when Chelsea attack that much, especially players like Anderson and Mjelda getting forward at the fullback position, they were leaving a lot of space at the back. And they did play loopholes and G kind of in the pivot. But that Chelsea midfield and front was so fluid, and you could see they had the bit by their teeth so early on. I thought Madrid did a really good job of taking advantage early on of that space. Ludmila obviously is a fantastic player. We just saw her in the She Believes Cup. And she, I think if there is any hope for Madrid, it's that in the second leg, they should be able to, with the amount Chelsea attack, Chelsea do kind of give you a glimpse. Like if you can take your chances, they're not necessarily the most controlling side. Although maybe we will see Emma Hayes flip the formation to play a little bit more of a ball possession kind of formation in the second leg.
Yeah, and also, I mean, if that penalty had gone in and they'd got that away goal, I think that would have forced Chelsea to play a lot differently as well in the second leg and take a far different approach to that and really go for it in the second leg, which then would have given Atletico Madrid more opportunities, more space to try and turn over that deficit in the second leg and win the tie. So, yeah, it's just a shame that they weren't able to do that, but obviously a huge credit to Chelsea.
I think we've both joked about kind of finding Chelsea a bit annoying or finding them so good that it's hard to get excited about them. But actually this was one of the few matches I found them very compassionate and found them very exciting. I really found myself being drawn into kind of the greatness of Emma Hayes and the club, which doesn't really happen to me. I really do find them vile half the time, even in their greatness. So it was a real night for just enjoying what makes football teams great, you know, whatever their background, wherever the money comes from, you know, whatever the badge. So that was a positive.
Sorry, I also saw a good tweet last night. I can't remember who tweeted it, but I saw a good tweet last night that said, you know, there's Chelsea and then there's Chelsea men. So I think that's a good way to sometimes kind of... in your head, if you're sometimes feeling that kind of moral conundrum that we feel sometimes, if you make that separation, I think it makes life a bit easier.
Well said. So, Man City 3, Flo 0. What was the story on this one?
Could have been worse. I saw Craig's tweet about what has been the record for a Champions League game, and I think it is something like 13 goals, because... some of those early round games where you've got teams playing each other like from different sides of Europe where the investment in women's football is so different. Yeah, there's been some pretty big scorelines. So I think Craig was referring to that when he tweeted that. But yeah, I think they scored within like the first minute and it was pretty one-sided. And to be fair to Fiorentina, they did limit the damage because it could have been double figures for sure. I mean... City had a lot more opportunities as well to score goals beyond that three. And I think there is this cheat codeness to them now. And I think...
the Sam Mewis header cheat code is definitely a thing.
Well, yeah, that's one of them. But I think it makes me really excited for England. But I also think that there's a naivety from teams not to shut this down. This bronze Kelly link up on the right hand side, and Kelly uses her pace to drive to the line and then put a fantastic cross in for Lauren Hemp, Ellen White, Sam Mewis, Caroline Weir, Georgia Stanway, insert Manchester City name. surely you just shut that down. I know football is not, you know, a simple game
easier
at times.
Yeah.
But in my head, in the last couple of weeks, 90% of their goals have come from those opportunities and that situation. So I don't understand, you know, I know, yeah, easier said than done to be like, close down Chloe Kelly and shut off that cross. But in my head, you know, if you do cut that out, you cut out where a majority of their goals are coming from at the moment. And I think teams are a bit naive to not catch on to that right now, because that is their best outlet. And I think Fiorentina were like that last night. They couldn't really ever get themselves into the game. They ended up just having to slow the pace of the game down completely in order to really get a hold of things. And it shows the gap. You know, Serie A is still very much a growing league. It's getting a lot better, but there is a massive gap between Serie A and the WSL.
Might be teasing the kind of just having a little bit of a WSL preview after this, but it's interesting you mentioned that about Fiorentina, you know, not thinking more about Chloe Kelly, but it's going to be interesting to see how teams in the WSL and in the Champions League maybe have a more defensive left winger, kind of left central midfielder, who is going to almost act as like a second left back to try and deal with that Kelly Bronze partnership on the right that is clearly so effective and or cheat codish, in your words. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there, especially because on Sunday, Man City are playing Chloe Kelly's former club, Everton. So I wonder if Willie Kirk is going to have some sort of Chloe Kelly kryptonite, which is quite fun to say, for that match. As I teased, Flo, I switched this game off after Ellen White scored because I'd had enough. I was really excited about Fiorentina. I was over it. I didn't need to see a 3-0. But I was rewarded for my switch of stream, and I watched. I popped over to Malmö and caught some of Rosengard 2, St. Poulton 2. What a classic.
It sounded like a classic.
It was an absolute classic. Forgive me, listener. I obviously do not know much about these teams. I am in the school of Mia Eriksson. I'm in the school of Soph Lawson. Talked a lot about both those people on the pod before. Really, really know their Scandinavian football. Definitely worth a follow. At @Lawson_SV was throwing out some great anecdotes about when they'd seen some of these players in the past few seasons and what was good about them, how they caught their eye. Kind of the stories about both these teams, listeners, are coming off extended winter breaks. So this is almost like a pre-season game for them, being in the Scandinavian and Austrian zones. I think maybe the Austrian one was a Christmas break or like winter break, whereas Malmö, Rosengard, their season is in a different season because of the winter up there. So I think there was, at least in my head, the narrative that I was writing, Rosengard were coming into this game literally and figuratively cold, and so St. Poulton were able to catch them off guard. So as you may not know, listener, Rosengard are a very established, much better, kind of more history team, you'd say, Flo, than St. Poulton.
Yeah, oh, 100%. Martyrs played there. Anita Asante played at Rosengard, I think. Tons of players have played at Rosengard. Kristen Press played at Rosengard, didn't she? Oh, no, she was at Gothenburg,
she was also at Tyresö, that other kind of club.
But yeah, I mean, obviously Sweden, big forms football, but Rosengard especially has had a big names.
So yeah, and they were at home, and there was this beautiful fog descending. It was a bit of a wintry classic Champions League game, and really against the run of play. It felt like St. Poulton hadn't even got the ball outside the Rosengard box. Matejo Zavir scores this amazing kind of, it's sort of like Route 1 masterpiece, you know, keeper knocks it up, knocked on, and it was very Ebony Salmon, because St. Poulton, like a Bristol City or whatever, they just hadn't really had the ball. So you hadn't really seen what they were going to be like when they did work the ball. And in a way, that gives me even more credit to a team. It makes me want to give that team more credit, because it's hard in a game when you don't have the time on the ball to build chances and get warm up into the game. To take a chance like that when it's the first time you've had the ball in the box. It's the first time you're looking at the keeper. It's the first time you're finding your angles. And Matejo Zavir was just so good at finishing this chance. It was a really ice-cold finish. Steph Lab, the Canada keeper, was in goal. Maybe could have done better. She did give her outside post a lot to Zavir before she took it. So there was this kind of scramble to the game. And a player which really stood out to me, remember the name, listener, is Jelena Kankovic, who I nicknamed the Witch. Because I often think magician gets thrown out, wizard gets thrown out, but we never really hear of a player being called the Witch, unless you can think of one.
Some sorcery.
absolute sorceress. Incredible touch, best technical player on the pitch. She missed a sitter in the first half. She also set people up with back heels flicks. She has this, the reason I call her the witch is because when St. Paulton players would go to challenge her and put in a big tackle, she'd sort of like accidentally nutmeg them. And it was like she'd go into to cause a tackle, but she'd kind of end up coming out of the tackle with a flick or a trick. She was just kind of amazing to watch. And she had this brilliant way of finding the fullback on the overlap from the middle of the pitch with this lofted through ball. Really fantastic player. She got a yellow card for doing a slide tackle on one of the St. Paulton centre-backs early on in the game as well. So you could tell she was just so frustrated and so angry that she that Rosengard, this big team, were losing at home. So yeah, first half, 1-0 down, you're like, oh my God, Rosengard, you know, people are starting to write this, the kind of the reports about how this team are crumbling. 30 seconds into the second half, Mataja Zavir picks up some really poor hospital passing in the Rosengard back four, storms down on goal, does an Ebony Salmon and slots it away. And you're just thinking, oh my God, we're finally going to have an upset. You know, we talked about Chelsea kind of taking care of business, in albeit in dramatic circumstances. Man City taking care of business. You know, if you didn't see the other games, Bayern Munich knocked six in, took care of business. Barcelona knocked four in, took care of business. Finally, we were getting that UEFA Champions League upset that we were all kind of looking out for in this midweek games. And then you get the kind of classic comeback where 2-0 down, Rosengard just start creating chance after chance. Kenkovic is just really trying to put the whole game on her own shoulders. They get the equaliser, beautiful assist from Kenkovic, flicking it over, and then Son Nielsen gets the kind of amazing tapped-in goal, and then more and more pressure, chances missed, free kicks, corners, and then the 94th minute, Caroline Seager kind of knocks in a rebound from a corner, and I just, again, had my breath taken away and was so just in joy. Just in an absolute moment of joy of loving what football can do to you, and to see that in a Champions League tie where we were so almost given an upset. But even so, I think St. Paulton got two away goals, and they'll go back to Austria knowing that, you know, they could have the only upset of the round the way things are going. So yeah, thank you for indulging me. Great game of football.
No, I love that. Should we fly through some of the other scores as well from the round?
Yeah, I kind of just teased them out. Barcelona beat Fortuna Høring in Denmark 4-0. Jenny Hermosa getting a hat-trick. Fantastic player.
And do we think at this moment in time Barca look like the biggest threat to Chelsea? I'm thinking that based on how well they're doing the league, based on if they had a fully fit team. I know Lika Martins is having some injury issues at the moment, but I think they do look like the biggest threat to Chelsea. And I do think Lyon are not going to do it this season.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the best place to go. Yeah, Wolfsburg beat LSK 2-0. Alexander Popp came up with a couple of goals. Lyon beat Bromby 2-0 today, which I watched, Flo. But as you teased, very underwhelming performance from Lyon, and it does look like this might be the year the crown finally falls from their head.
Yeah, and are they still second in Divisiona Femina? They were as of last week. Yeah, so I think PSG is still top. So, it's a transition season, I guess you could call it. Although they haven't had a change of coach, they've obviously lost a few players and gained a few players. So, I think it is a bit of a changing of the guard there. But does it, like, you know, Barcelona look very strong, score a lot of goals. And I think they will give Chelsea a run for their money on that front.
I think the things that will worry people watching the Lyon game today was how they didn't really know how to open up Bromby once Bromby got all their defensive tactics right. It was very classic English or Scandinavian 4-4-2. You got your clean banks. It was kind of like Brighton on a good day, you know? Everyone's doing their job. They're filling the spaces that Lyon wanted to be in. And Kat Macario, Nikita Paris, they were kind of... And, you know, these are players... You know, Macario's new there, but it felt like you weren't sure who was meant to go where. No Cascarino, Le Sommer came off the bench. So they were definitely maybe resting a couple of their real star players. So you know Lyon have another gear.
I suppose that's always the risk when you do assemble the dream team. And Emma Hayes, at the start of the season, there was that sort of narrative. She's kind of thrown that to the window now because she's mastered a bit of rotation quite well and it's working well for them. So, you know, that is the tricky thing. Even though you've got, you know, all the resources at your disposal, you've still got to make all the pieces come together.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that Khadisha Buchanan came back into the side today. She's been out with injury and Kumagai has been back in defence. So they got Kumagai back into the midfield, which I think will help. especially like you're talking about in the league, where they still want to be able to win the French league. And I think the other thing they'll want to see more from is Ellie Carpenter at right back being able to do more attacking stuff. Majuri, I think Macario and Paris had so many players around them that I almost don't really put it on them. I think you're wanting to see more from the fullbacks getting forward and kind of overlapping and demanding more. And
there's just so much pressure on Carpenter, and she's so young. It's just mad to feel.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And Macario is so young.
And to be thrown, just to be thrown straight into that role to replace the best right back in the world at her age is really difficult, and do the same things that she was doing. She's not as physical as Lucy Bronze is. She's not as fit as Lucy Bronze, I don't think. I mean, Lucy Bronze is a warrior in what she does. Ellie Carpenter's a different sort of player. So it's a big challenge.
Yeah, there was a moment in the second half, maybe this is reading too much into it, but where Ellie Carpenter burst past her player and then the centre-back came and closed her down, and she... maybe there was a little bit of contact, but it looked very fair, shoulder to shoulder. And she went down and she kind of slammed the pitch and was trying to claim a penalty. And she was like, you know, I've been fouled, ref. And I think you heard the Lyon manager say something like, she didn't get the ball, or like something la ballon. But I obviously, A, don't speak good enough French. B, it was kind of hard to hear on the stream. And I think to see Lyon 1-0 up at home against Bromby, and Ellie Carpenter's like maybe trying to dive and win a penalty and not like trying to focus, I think again it just showed you that like there's something is happening there where they're really clutching at straws to try and get the breakthrough against teams they should be able to beat. But obviously Bromby a lot of credit for being really well organized today. Okay, well yeah, I think that's all the games have got a mensch. PSG are playing Sparta Prague next week as well, which is the 8th tie of the round of 16. But otherwise, Flo, let's move on. And if you want to jump it back to over to England and give us a little update of the FA Women's Cup and how it's coming back.
Yeah, so the FA Cup is back, I think. I think for the first time since it would have been November, I think. We've had so many lockdowns in the UK now, I can't even remember which one this was that halted it. But I think it was November, where the second round and first round had to stop and the FA Cup was halted. The FA announced today that it's going to get back underway, which is great, because I think lots of people were worried that it was going to get scrapped altogether, especially as teams hadn't been able to train and stuff. But we now have news today that the one remaining game in the first round will take place on the 31st of March. Second round games will take place on 4th of April. Then the third round will take place on the 11th of April. And then the fourth round, which is the round in which Championship and WSL teams come into play, they will take place on the 18th of April. All the draws have already been made, which is an interesting one. So there's lots of, you know, this person or this person might play this person or this person. Obviously, there's kind of a lot still to be worked out, but we have some timelines, we have some dates to look forward to, we have some football, and yeah, it's reassuring that they've been able to get this up and running. Conversation still continues around the inefficient prize money in that tournament, but that is for another day. I'm just pleased that it wasn't scrapped altogether this season.
Well said. Yeah, very excited to have some of those National League sides back who have been on pause, I guess. It's, yeah, you're right, end of November, December,
yeah,
would have been the last time some of those teams played. And as we said, yeah, keep an eye on what's going to happen with the Women's National League, FA Women's Championship, relegation, promotion, kind of all a bit TBD, and we probably won't really hear the last of that until probably July or August. Okay, Flo, bit of WSL going back on the weekend. We won't go too in depth like we used to with the previews, but if you do have any questions about where to watch the games, listener, please reach out. I can tell you everything's going to be on FA Player or BT Sport, and Atta Football has three games for the international people this weekend. They're all going to be live on Atta Football for free. Manchester United, Aston Villa, which is the early kickoff, and then Man City, Everton, and Bristol City, Reading is on Atta Football in certain markets as well on Monday night, Monday afternoon over here. Flo, pick out a couple of things you think people should be looking out for in the WSL this weekend. You're going to be at the game.
Yes, yeah, so I'm going to be at West Ham Chelsea, which is, I think...
Privilege.
It's definitely a privilege. I think it's one of the better games of the weekend. I mean, I was maybe a bit harsh on this week because there's not really any top of the table clashes. There's of mid-table ones with Brighton versus Spurs, and, well, Man City aren't mid-table, they're in second, but Everton, who I guess are fighting to try and put pressure on the top four, but are mid-table. Bristol City, Reading, must win for Bristol City, but I don't know, there's just not enough storylines going through this weekend for me, so I just hope we get some good games. But I'll leave you your rebuttal shortly. But yeah, I'll be at West Ham Chelsea. Ollie Harder under huge pressure, and could be, I want to say, actually, I think Liverpool have had two managers go in the space of the season, because Neil Redfern resigned and then Chris Kirkland sort of took temporary charge. He was goalkeeping coach, and then Vicky Jepson took over. She was already in the coaching setup. So I guess you could say that Liverpool had two managers that season. But if Ollie Harder goes, probably want to be one of the few times two managers are kind of resigned / got sacked for a WSL side and a WSL season. But they look really in trouble and slowly potentially get themselves into a relegation fight. So it'll be an interesting one how they come up against Chelsea on Sunday.
Chelsea, obviously, we've gone over it a lot on this episode. They've been through a lot, come out the other side a lot midweek. Do you think that gives West Ham more of a chance?
No. I think that gives them less of a chance.
No, absolutely not.
Because Emma Hayes has still got a lot of players that she can play that didn't feature on Wednesday night. So I think she's feeling pretty confident.
Feeling pretty good. Well, listener, wherever you are in the world, or even if you're in the UK, you can watch on FA Player Brighton and Hove Albion at home against Tottenham Hotspur.
Is this the one that you think has... Is this your narrative right here, baby?
This is my narrative. This is the game of the week, in my opinion. I think it's a big one because Hope Powell just got back-to-back wins for the first time in Brighton's history. I mean, the first time she's done it as a WSL manager. Obviously, a legend at the international level beforehand. I think it's a really, really big moment for Brighton to see where they're at, a bit of a kind of a heat check, as American basketball fans say. And Spurs, on the flip side, came in hot with Rianne Skinner, had three wins off the bat. They've now had three losses in a row. I think we definitely felt after last week the Spurs' performance levels are much higher. They're attacking more from open play, which is something they weren't doing under Karen Hills at the beginning of the season. So Skinner has a lot of credit in the bank, but now she's coming up against a team that really, at least a point, maybe three, Spurs will be expecting. Brighton at home, again, a point or maybe even three will be expecting from them. So I think you'll see in a game where you're going to see both managers try and figure out how they can make it work. Even from an open play angle, I think it'll be interesting to see how Brighton can be more creative, which they've struggled with. Players like Kagmon, Ellie Brazil have kind of maybe taken the brunt of most of it. Eileen Whelan's on a scoring spree, something you don't see very often. Is she going to keep that going? Also, set pieces. Both these teams rely so much on set pieces. Brighton throughout the season, and Spurs, again, before Rianne Skinner, only scored from set pieces. Siri Vaughan might be coming back from injury, another reason to watch this game. Otherwise, I'm really interested to see who Rianne Skinner trusts up front. I think we'll see a little bit more of Angela Addison, a little bit more of Gemma Davison after last week, but otherwise, she's been kind of rotating through lots of players, Jez Naz, Rosella Ayan, to name a few, as well as kind of last year's top scorer, Rihanna Dean, who seems completely off the map. So I think this game is going to be really interesting to see as kind of a test of who belongs in the mid-table of the WSL, which is no mean feat the way a lot of teams are investing. You know, we were just talking about West Ham maybe getting relegated this season. That is a team that have been taking women's football pretty seriously in the kind of current climate to some extent. So I think seeing Brighton and Tottenham in this spot, I think, is going to just be a really great watch to see where these programs, which aren't that old, where they are. And they have it.
Heat check.
Yeah, Bristol City Reading is on Monday night or Monday afternoon in the USA. It will be really interesting to see Matt Beard try and get the relegation good times and morale back up again. Obviously, always an absolute pleasure to watch Ebony Salmon play, so definitely go check that out. Man City Everton, like I said, which is going to be on Atta Football, is probably the marquee game, so that's going to be the 8 a.m. Central Time, 9 a.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. kickoff back home. Flo, should we get out of here? Let's get the hell out of here. I'll see you on Sunday after you get back from Dagenham. Give my love to Dagenham.
I will.
Been a very, very long time since I was there. All right. Have a good rest of your night.